today. It's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And just before we start, a quick reminder that tomorrow, Tuesday at 8 p.m. Sydney time, I'll be running the next live stream and I'll be reporting on the September stress data. That's both mortgage stress, rental stress and investor stress. And I'll also be talking about my updated scenarios, having taken account of all the changes that have happened recently. So I look forward to seeing you there. The links are in the comments below. Today, I'm joined by our property insider, Edwin Almeida, once again. Hi, Edwin.
G'day, Martin. How are you going?
Yeah, pretty good. I seem to have been more busy today on the bank holiday than normal.
Yeah, apparently so. I mean, it's, I'm sure you're busy. Look, I got so busy that in the middle of the day, I had to take a siesta and almost went into the next day when it started turning into a nightmare with all the stimulus that I was dreaming about that the government was going to throw at the property market tomorrow.
Well, there's certainly plenty of it about, you know, more first home owner grants, more stimulus for the construction sector, of course, infrastructure. Looks as though they're going to also bring forward the tax cuts that were passed earlier and indeed maybe even backdating them. And doing, you know, lots of other things.
Like putting up roundabouts, stop signs, I believe, in Queensland, stop signs, roundabouts, and all sorts of things like that. Like, maybe employ a few more lollipop ladies and lollipop people. What else? Yeah, just throw a few more firecrackers in the property fire. That's all I can say. Just and then we'll move on to from Tom Thumbs, we'll go all the way to Thunders and a couple of grenades. How's that?
Well, that's probably right. I think, you know, regardless as the appetizer, there's probably more to come. The other interesting thing I think we should see is how many times the term shovel ready is actually covered by the politicians in the speeches and in the media subsequently, because it seems to be a sort of phrase of choice.
Yeah, look, the shovel ready, it's it's an interesting phrase. Well, look, I know that every tool out there, every spade, every shovel, every pick is ready to go. It's just the people have to work them are the people that don't really want to move, which is predominantly the politicians or the people that have to put money in their pocket to make things happen. Every shovel I see is always ready to work. It's just whether or not people want to pick it up and make it work.
Right. And, you know, part of this, of course, is that once you start talking about infrastructure, then you're talking about a lag, quite a long lag normally, between a concept, an idea and what finally happens. And I actually think the government is actually quite good at, spinning everything and presenting more stories. The question is, how much does it follow through? How much does it actually, turn into real results and real actions? I mean, we've seen other examples where, in fact, not much has happened, despite the fact that lots of announcements are made and repeated and made several times. The other interesting point, of course, did you notice that they're basically assuming that there will be a vaccine early next year, and so that the virus essentially will be under control quite soon? And I would say that's probably quite a heroic assessment, really.
Well, look, Corona is becoming a dirty word, I think, in many languages. That's why I'm not drinking Corona tonight. I mean, well, this evening in a hot weekend, I'm drinking Great Northern, because Corona is becoming a dirty word. So I don't know what to think of this vaccine, Martin. All I know is I think if you want to travel overseas, you're going to have one.
Yeah, that's probably right. And of course, the other point to make there is that the situation in the US, of course, with the president now getting the virus and claiming he's gone back to school to learn all about it, and then driving around in the limo just to say, hello, I'm here, takes the absurdity to a further level, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, then you could also say that at least one gets to drive around in the limo waving and saying, hey, I'm here. And the other one, from all reports, you sort of wonder whether he's on a permanent siesta as well. So it's It's politics all the same all around, isn't it? Every country, we just have to fend for ourselves, I think, Martin. It's one of those things. I've seen it all from South American politics to North American to Asian politics and Australian, of course. And it's look, a politician's a politician. It's just one of those unnatural, uncanny beasts, isn't it?
Well, you wonder what quiet world they're in. It seems to be a rather different world from the everyday world that perhaps you and I inhabit. But talking about everyday worlds or mirages, we could turn that into the property market and have a discussion about that as normal, of course, because there was an interesting turn of events in the newspapers today.
Yeah, look, gangster economics is certainly getting out there, Martin. Where when the mainstream is picking up, and propagating now possible 5 to 10% drops in values already. It's an interesting turn of event. So I've seen some of the tweets going out today, and some people are asking whether or not Fairfax or the Fairfax World and all those involved with the newspaper and everything else out there, and perhaps even Domain, maybe even CoreLogic. Now, CoreLogic doesn't agree to it, but we'll talk about that a little bit later on. Saying whether or not they may have the virus, they may have the flu, and things may have slipped through the goalkeeper and and out into the mainstream, and people are starting to get to know the truth. So gangster economics all the way.
But the article was in the Sydney Morning Herald, right? And it was actually entitled "Why Sydney Property Market Could Be in Worse Shape Than You Thought."
Yeah, we sort of wonder why. It does jog the memory a bit. Now, let me think, why would it be in the worst situation than what everybody thinks? Let's just start pulling it apart, Martin, and let's talk about the delayed results. The sales and auction results that don't come in, or better still, they do come in, but the mainstream and CoreLogic don't want to report on it and don't report. They cherry pick what they want to put out there, as opposed to putting it all out there so that people can make a very and well educated decision, as opposed to being dragged along on this emotional bandwagon that things are pumping again and things are going up and so forth. Or if they're falling, they're not falling as rapidly as what you and I and our data and our friends online tell us that it's going down in the many suburbs that they live in.
Mm. Well, it is very interesting because, clearly there is a debate going on about whether the market is or isn't recovering. And some of the mainstream and some of the indices are arguing quite strongly for bounces in Auckland clearance rates and everything is fine. But all the data that I see down in the granular level is much more concerning in terms of very low transaction volumes, in terms of many prices still well below where they were. And there's an interesting little observation. If you go and look at the small print on pretty much all of the portals, right, they actually basically walk away from any accountability for anything they have on their sites. They basically say, well, you'll have to take it at your own risk. If it's useful, use it. If not, fine. No liability, no accountability. So in a way, they've got a get out of jail card. They can put up whatever they want. They can say whatever they want, and there's no recourse.
No recourse. And the other thing is they're relying on what I believe to be the most honest industry in the world. Is that right?
Well, I believe that that's what I hear, that, total truth is always spoken, that it is always, if anything, I think real estate agents underplay the quality of property and underplay the value of property just to be safe and cautious,
Yeah, look, it's rather interesting, but I thought what Professor Truick, I thought when I was reading the article, I thought it was going to be Professor Tarek, but had some insights in there. But, they obviously didn't call him, because they should have called him, because he's got some very, very interesting data that he's been collating for weeks now and putting it all together so that everybody can see a clearer picture. But it must be his big uncle, Professor Truick. He actually gives the mainstream and he gives CoreLogic an out, although he agrees with the greater falls, but he gives them an out, and he blames he blames, you know, that virus, that you know, Chinese virus stuff that came out in a meteor, according to many. But he blames that as opposed to getting to the real duck's guts, as they, oh, is it duck's guts, or yeah, getting to the guts of it all.
Yeah, well, we do know that many of the prices are not being reported. We do know that in some cases the data does get reported, but selectively. And we do know that, of course, the settlement data, which comes in a lot later, doesn't necessarily always find its way back into the original indices that were quoting a particular number, because you don't actually see back correction based on later information coming in, right? Which you'd expect to see if you know, that data was incorporated. So all of that suggests that that the numbers are a bit fuzzy at best.
Yeah, look, and if you look at it logically, we can tell, we know that if they're going to be relying on the settlement data, which is effectively a settlement takes place, you know, on or about 42 days post exchange of contracts. So that's 6 weeks. Now, the property, you know, and it may be delayed by another 2 weeks. There may be other you know, scenarios there that play out in terms of delay. The settlement could be delayed by another two weeks. So because as it happens, and then it goes to you approach the settlement date. The property settles. You know, title deeds exchange. The whole bit happens, and then by the time it is actually officially reported to the mainstream, it's to the general public, it could be another 2 to 4 weeks, you know, at best. So then they're saying, CoreLogic are saying that they picked this information up because that is obviously what is solidified, what is concrete, what is real, right? That's on the one hand. So then therefore, on that scenario, we could say that CoreLogic is, best case scenario, is 60 to 70 days lagging. So it's not a very up-to-date form of measuring the prices, right? On the other hand, they say, no, we bring that forward. We bring that that information, we bring it forward because we contact all the agents. And this is what Ms. Hedonic, you know, Eliza Owens reports on that article. And she says that, you know, we call the agents, which is the same discussion that I had with Tim Lawless a few years back on Twitter, and it's open there, and I've screenshotted and I've got it filed away. And that's where, you know, where he actually said that, in his view, it's 62 days is the worst case scenario. I believe it's the best case scenario, but let's just leave it there. So even if it's their worst case scenario, it's still lagging. Right. So Ms. Owen says that they call the agents, which is also the same story that I got from Tim. They call the agents within a week or so, and then the data is updated. If that was the case, Martin, if that was so true, why is it that example that I sent you, why hasn't that been updated? They've updated the sale date, but they haven't updated the sale price, and yet the hedonic daily index to the right of that screenshot gives you the information where they're still predicting that property in that area is worth you know, almost $2.5 million, when it actually sold that auction weeks ago, almost over 2 months ago. It sold for 1.4, and as a matter of fact, we know the story behind that that property as well. It got sold. The buyer wasn't able to complete, and now it's back on the market. And even though, yeah, and because of that reason that it's back on the market, it's very interesting that the hedonic daily index hasn't adjusted its value. If anything, at one stage, at one point in my searches and my screenshots, at one point it actually went up in value as opposed to going down. Given the fact that the agent is guiding the property for sale at $1,490,000, notwithstanding the fact that it was already sold at an auction in July for $1,400,000, and that is registered on CoreLogic, but maybe they misplaced the $1,400,000, maybe that's why it didn't sell. You know, I don't know. It's mind-boggling. But that's only one of hundreds of examples that we've collected over the months.
Mm. Yes, well, there does seem to be a bit of a lag between, you know, data coming in and records being updated. The other point, of course, Edwin, it's worth just considering about is off-the-plan purchases, right? Because there, the whole settlement cycle is completely different.
Yeah, and a lot of people identify, a lot of people, when you talk to them about off-the-plan purchases, it conjures the imagery of Opal Tower or high-rise development or apartments. But we also have off-the-plan purchases for freestanding homes. We also have property contracts for freestanding homes, which could take anywhere between 6 to 12 months to complete, depending. It's obviously it's a shorter period of time of completion, but we still have off-the-plan purchases in freestanding homes or medium density, and subdivisions and the like. Or even you could buy a block of land, 2-3 years. Ago and still not build anything on it because you're saving up some money for the construction or whatever your reason is. So that people have got to start associating more so off the plan purchases across the board, not just with apartments, which a lot make the mistake of thinking it's just off the plan purchase for apartments.
Mm. But the point there, Edwin, is that whole journey of buying off the plan, as it were, whether it's an apartment or whether it's a house, right? It's a series of payments made at various points through the construction cycle. But the final settlement and transfer won't be until the thing is finished, right?
That's correct. And the price is the price point is the price point that you agreed to pay for it a year ago, 2 years ago, 6 months ago, or 3 years ago, yep. which is in our, in our dialogue, that's a lot higher than what the current properties are selling for at the time.
Right. And then if you take into account that there are some situations where effectively the purchaser gets a big chunk of money back, so in other words, they pay the gross price, but as part of this transaction, they get another $20,000, $60,000 back, right, as a sort of a reverse transfer so that they can quote the higher price when it comes to settlement, but the true net value is substantially lower, and that actually happens quite a lot at the moment.
Well, it does, and that's a practice that comes from the from years ago, almost a couple of decades ago, when properties, predominantly apartments, needed to be sold, and you had a contract, and there was an agreed discount. For settling a lot earlier, so the price was jacked up, so in order so that it can value, so effectively it becomes a 100% loan, if not more, depending on the rebate that was calculated in the contract of sale. Now, there have been some rulings with regard to that in, if my memory serves me right, in 2005, 2006, where there was a case that became the precedent to basically put a stop to all that, to the rebate contracts. But obviously, look, there are people finding ways of skirting around that. They get rebates by way of also rental guarantees, as we've been saying all along, is the reason why we don't have a huge avalanche of apartments on the market at the moment. Could also, one of the reasons could quite possibly be because a lot of these apartments that have already settled over the last year or even 2 years have settled with a 3- and 4-year rental guarantee. So effectively, the spruiking company that sold, the poor bastards that bought these apartments off the plan with that rental guarantee, well, then they're forking out the weekly amount of rent, whether there's a tenant in there, whether there's not, or if there is a tenant in there, that the agency or the spruiking company or the building company make up the difference. So that's why we're not seeing. So there's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of shenanigans, a lot of things that are at play, things that things that are bouncing the right way. But again, it's almost like it's almost as exciting as watching at the moment New Zealand play Australia in rugby. it can get really, really hectic out there. And, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on there, you know, there's, with all the rivalry. And you, it's watching them play, and not only playing rugby on a normal day, but in a rainy day. And that's when things really get exciting. The ball gets becomes slippery, and people are falling over each other, and you don't know who's who and whatnot. And, you know, and that's what that's how I see the property market at the moment. You know, as we've said before, there are certain areas in Sydney that have found a flaw, and that flaw seems to be strong, but it's only as strong as the next economic downturn or the next grenade that's thrown at the economy. Others seem to be going up because there's very little property there, and it's a property that is highly sought after, that people want to move away from high-rise development into more of a freestanding environment, more of into a space environment. So but there's a lot of things happening all around, and we just have to be cautious and careful as to how this is played out. But one of the things is that although things may be looking to be ticking up, but the consistency is down. It is a downward trend, and it has gone down a lot further than what we've been told.
Mm. Well, what's interesting, Edwin, because I do a lot of analysis, as you know, across individual postcodes, and I quite often get these high level statements from people claiming that there's been a massive rise up in properties, right? Property values. And so I had a look. For example, I looked at Wollongong just recently. Somebody asked me about that. And I see this pattern quite consistently. There was a period earlier on, often in 2014 or 15 or 16, where there was quite a spike up in price. You know, values did go up. But then they've sort of gone sideways and drifted down, a little bit up and down possibly. But the whole concept of, you know, massive amounts of price acceleration in the last year or two, I just don't see it. I really don't in the data that I see coming through, both units and houses, and it's pretty consistent. Now, there are some areas where prices are a little stronger. There are others where they're radically weaker. But this whole concept of suddenly the whole market's turned around and everything's really hot is just so far from the truth as to be laughable, except, of course, that people are getting sucked in.
That's correct. And look, and they're also getting sucked in, unfortunately, by what I call the turncoat economists or commentators, because they themselves have gone out and bought themselves a home, and all of a sudden now prices aren't going to go down as low as what they used to preach that they were. Why? Because the wife or the husband or the partner has forced them into buying a property. So therefore now the whole rhetoric or the mind changed. Why? Because now they've got to tell the rest of or justify it in themselves by changing their mantra that they're putting out there. Look, it's you and I see what we see because you see it from your surveys and on a granular level because of the amount of people you talk to, the amount of people you have on your database and all the information that you get. I see it because I'm probably in and out of home, 60, 70 homes on a weekly basis and climbing, and I can see, and my associates likewise, and we see, we compare this information, and also from getting your data source, getting other data points from other colleagues and the history that I've got in the industry, and getting information from a lot of my colleagues in the industry as well as to what they're seeing on the ground at grassroots level, not because something happened to me financially or economically that's going to change my position, it's going to change my mind. If the property market drops, but for what how I see it, it will eventually drop. We'll get to see those levels, which I've said before publicly. We're going to get to 2004, 2005 type of scenarios, which there isn't much of a difference between 2004, 2005 to 2013, 2014 in terms of capital growth across the board. There's not much of a big difference there. But if we see that in many areas we're going to see drops back down to the 2005 pricing, guess what, Martin? My family will also lose a hell of a lot of money. So, but I don't change, and I haven't changed my position because, if anything, what's been happening in all this turmoil, what I am seeing is how enthusiastic the powers to be are to really keep this, keep this bubble expanding. And little do they know that they ran out of coal, they ran out of wood chips, they ran out of timber, and now they're throwing in Tom Thumbs, Penny Farthings, and you know, Thunders, and eventually, so sooner than later, it's gonna blow up once all this stimulus stops. So you know, you can drag it a bit further down, but you can't drag it. Like I said before, it's going over the cliff. No matter how many mattresses you put at the bottom of that that ravine, it's gonna crash.
Yep, no, it's just a matter of timing. And, you know, interestingly, of course, the other observation is if the government was so confident that the property market was so positive, they wouldn't be throwing all the stimulus measures that they're throwing in.
No, and a lot of it really is interesting. It's really trying to, oh, look, they're in power, whether it be the Liberal or the Labor government, whoever will be in power. You've got to give it a positive spin, don't you? I mean, you're in power. That's part and parcel of it. You make a lot of promises before you get into power, and you only keep if you're generous, you only keep half of them, and that's if you're generous. But the rest of it is just it's just fluff. I mean, this granny flat scenario. I mean, seriously, they're gonna waive the granny flat is to get a CGT exemptions. Yeah, let me clarify this to our audience, Martin. One, you got to make money to, first of all, have a capital gains tax. That's the first thing. Yeah, secondly, you got to sell the property in order to make that capital to solidify, quantify how much money you've made, right? So third, there's thousands of empty granny flats in Sydney already, so why build more?
Yep. No, that's the point. There is actually an oversupply, and as you say, unless you actually make a profit, essentially there's nothing there to claim back. Has to be a gain, not a loss, right? Otherwise it doesn't work.
Yeah, and also, look, but it's promising. When you don't think about it, you know, on paper, you know, these ideas or these thoughts, these thought bubbles that these politicians have, seem great on the surface. They how good! Look at it. They're looking after the retirees. They are looking after the elderly. Really? They're talking about relaxing the lending regulations. I mean, we still got to go through Parliament, haven't we? Still got to go through both houses, and that's not going to happen until March next year. If it gets through Parliament, so all these things that they're thrown out there, all these thought bubbles, just to create that emotional, that feeling of perhaps missing out, that feeling of perhaps, oh look, yeah, property market is going up, so let's go out and buy before we miss out again. What I'm seeing is I'm not seeing the numbers that I was expecting to see, given that it's spring, given the fact that in winter we saw a gradual rise in property listing numbers in Sydney, you know, for sale, that is, particularly freestanding homes. I'm not seeing a continual rise. We seem to have tapered out around the 18,500 overall listings on Domain and 8,500 freestanding homes as well for Sydney. So I would expect it to be over 9,000 by now, but we're not seeing. Why? Because what I am seeing, what I am witnessing in my inquiry is that just as many are taken off market to go into an off-market campaign or taking off the portals, being listed online, there's just as many, if not a little bit more, replacing those, which are new listings. So And why do you put a property on the market? Most of the time it's because you have to sell. You want to sell. You don't test the market, particularly if you're paying the agent or the agencies that vendor paid advertising that could be anywhere between $5,000 and $10,000. You're not just going to throw it just to test the market.
All right. So, Edwin, I guess we should just take the conversation then to the property in focus.
Let's just talk in general this time in property in focus, because we're going to be talking about something that is very serious, and it's not just happening in King's Landing, which is where I was over the weekend on Saturday for a particular auction. to check an auction for a client. But what I've also noted in the tweets and the responses to the tweet when I was tweeting this out is the fact that it's happening in general all over Sydney. And that is, you know, in our property in focus, we're going to look at the fact that what we're noting now is that a lot of agents or agencies are underquoting, which is an offence under the Property Stock and Business Agents Act, and fair trading should really be all over this like a rash. This particular property, you've got a screenshot there or the tweet feed that can go to that. I don't disclose the address on that, but this particular property was being marketed in Kings Langley by an out of area agent. And it was marketed at $1 million was the guide, and that was published all over the site for many weeks. So when I was there, we ended up with approximately 100, maybe 120 people in attendance. There were, by the time everyone registered, there was about 5 to 7 registered bidders. My clients were tempted to register for it because of the fact that it was being guided so low. But then after having a discussion with them, we knew that it was underquoted. And it actually got sold for $1,270,000. Now, that's a big difference from the guided price to the sale price. And it is an alarming. And this is what the mainstream report on, and they say, see, I told you the property market is going up. No, the simple fact is that around the corner from this particular house property, around the corner in not as good area and on a busier road, there was an actual sale a week ago, comparable sale. Yeah, very, very comparable sale a week ago. And these onwards from the local agents that were also present at the auction to see what this out of agent was going to do. And it sold for $1,180,000. And they said that would have been the closer guide. Throw in a bit of emotion, throw in a 10% hype, and it would have been sweet. But the simple fact is, Mark, this is happening all over Sydney. And this is what I've noticed that the mainstream media is picking up, is this low ball reserves. And then the reporters are reporting, I think there was one in an affluent suburb a couple of weeks ago, where it sold for something like $11 million above the reserve. And when you dig deeper into it, you find out that the bloody agent, the dipstick, was quoting that the guide was what the previous owner or the owner bought for in 2012 and 2013. That was the guide. So, but yet the mainstream don't report on that, or they have a very small print down the bottom to identify, to disclose that. But if anything, that should have been the story. Why was it underquoted? Why was it allowed to be underquoted? Why did the agent believe that the property was only worth what the person bought for it, the individual bought for it in 2012, 2013? That's the real question, not the $11 million over reserve that the new owner paid for.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? Because the whole point about underquoting is you're trying to suck people in to try and create more momentum to try and then drive the price higher, right? I guess that's the sort of the point. But you're right, there are some very strict rules around how far away you should be from where you land up. So the point is, if there is a massive delta between where the stake in the ground have been put and where you end up, well, that then suggests that there was something funny going on.
Yeah, either that, right? So either that, or the agent really didn't know the value of the property of the land. And I don't know. I would dare say to any of the neighbours, I wouldn't employ that idiot, because that's all they are. They end up being total dipsticks if they themselves think, yeah. Or the other scenario is, or maybe the agent or the agents in that area do believe that the values are only at 2012, and the person that bought it didn't give two rats and just said, stuff it, I'll just buy it, I've got money, I've got money to burn, I'll just do whatever. But I don't think that's a scenario. I think it's one of the earlier versions is a total dipstick and an idiot and shouldn't be employed, and you shouldn't employ him or her to sell your property. Or it was underquoted. Can't be anything else, Mark.
Right. And like I was going to say, you can't necessarily always, argue for every property, because there might be the odd person who comes in and thinks that the value is way higher simply because of some other reason, money laundering. Oh, did I say that? Or some other reason why that might be a good thing to do. But generally, there's definitely more evidence now that underquoting exists. And the fact is, as you quite rightly say, the mainstream media quite often pick that story up and then claim it's an example of the property market's booming. Well, we have to look harder, don't we?
Well, that's correct. And they're giving, and they're really giving these agents and agencies a pass. And I just can't wait until Fair Trading start doing the beat again and start attending some of these auctions. But overall, Martin, I know what you're seeing in your data, but what I'm seeing is, regardless of the fact that the auction clearance rates are now at allegedly at 72%, what I am seeing is that the actual volumes continue to drop in proportion to the numbers that are being taken to market. A lot of properties are not even getting to the day of the auction. They're either sold prior and people are taking, offers before auction. And as the old saying goes, first offers are generally in this marketplace could well and truly be the best offers. So they're taking them and running. So and there's going to be a lot of negotiations post auction, and that's what I'm seeing in a lot of areas, not in all areas, but in a lot of areas of Sydney.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree. So my data is also showing something of the same. There are a few hot spots, but many cool spots. And in many cases, the values that are being achieved now are still significantly below the peak back in 2017. So it's a question of when did you buy and when did you sell, right? So if you bought at the peak in 2017 and trying to sell now, you'll be selling at a loss. If you bought in 2005, then you may still be ahead. And in fact, in my data, I'm seeing more people now thinking, well, if prices are going to be relatively stagnant or fall ahead, maybe I should think about listing. But I'm also seeing now a bit of a move to list not now, but after Christmas, after the new year, once things have settled down a bit. So I would expect to see listings numbers increase more the other side of the holiday rather than before.
Yeah, look, people are being exposed to so much now, and they're just changing. I think they're taking stock of what the financial situations are or not, or may well end up being or may not. But this push, and just to end our conversation, Martin, this push with regards to to all sorts of different stimuluses, there's another 10,000 positions or properties or loans on offer by the government as well for people to take up, so they can go into a property purchase of a new property with a 5% deposit, and the government will give the other 15%. Let me remind everybody that 15% is not a gift. The government has been generous, but they're not that bloody generous. It's not a gift; it's a loan. So people are signing construction loans and purchasing a new property, signing purchases of land and construction loans, and as soon as they sign, they're already underwater. But as soon as they sign that piece of paper, and they don't see it, they don't know it. But sooner than later, they're going to feel it, which is going to be sad.
Yeah. No, well, that's right, Edwin. And I think that's a good note on which to end today's rant. And that is, people should be really, really careful. People should not take stuff at face value. People should not assume that just because the government is throwing money in your direction, it's necessarily the right thing for you in your own individual circumstances. And the last point is that the risks in the sector are continuing to build. And bearing in mind that the unemployment rate probably will be higher ahead before it goes lower, and that the budget assumption is that there'll be a vaccine early next year, which is perhaps a bit heroic, I think caution is the watchword for now.
Yeah, and I think that maybe this is just a maybe, Martin. I mean, I've got a caveat on this. Maybe what the government will say, if you buy a property next year, when the vaccine comes in, if you buy a property, we are going to give you a free vaccine. I'm just putting it out there, Martin. I'm just putting it out there. It's quite logical. Think about it. They want to get construction going. If you buy a new property, not only will give you a will lend you 15% of the value of the property, but we'll throw in not one but two vaccines in case the first one fails and you have all sorts of other defects. But I'm just putting it out here.
Right. Well, that means we'll have to have a whole new index. Right. Get the old paper and pen out, Edwin, and start designing.
The vaccine. And before we go, I just want to say that. The Great Northern wasn't as bad as what I thought it was going to be. Not as good as the other beer that I'm not allowed to mention their name, because it's taboo. But the Great Northern, don't mind it.
Okay. Well, recommended by Edwin. Thank you for that. Good to talk to you once again, and we'll catch up again next week.
And I'm sure it's going to be an interesting one. And I will have a haircut for next week. This is just my serious haircut because of the budget coming up tomorrow, Martin.
Well, I'm glad you took it very seriously, Edwin. I just pity you didn't wear a suit as well. But there you go. Can't win them all. Take care. No. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.